So I cut over an hour and 15 minutes of that, so I can tell you what you missed there, but where we can address questions first.
Tell us the missing middle.
All right, so a lot of that was going over the PNAC documents about Iraq. You'll get a lot of different reasons for the Iraq War, even from anti-war opponents. They will say things like, well, of course it was oil, it's a resource. That's sort of the common reason for any wars in the past. They did it for gold, they did it for opium, they did it for oil. But it wasn't oil companies that created the pretext to go into Iraq. It was a group of Israelis. They actually set up an office in the Pentagon called the Office of Special Plans. It was run by Douglas Feith. It was brought in by Richard Perle. Richard Perle was the head of the policy board in the Defense Department. And they were meeting with Israeli generals. They were coming in and out of the Pentagon illegally. I got a quote from Karen Kutowski in there, lieutenant, saying how they went in without signing in. They knew exactly where they were going. And these are the people they churned out one lie after another about anthrax, about mobile weapons labs, which Judith Miller reiterated from the New York Times. Judith Miller was dating Leibowitz, so Louis Libby, who was involved in Plain Affair. That was Dick Cheney's chief of staff. And he was a lawyer from the Mossad agent Mark Rich, who was thrown in jail and was pardoned by Bill Clinton on his last day in office. So what you'll see is this is lasting through several administrations, and it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican at all. If you had Bush Sr., you had Clinton and Bush Jr., all going after Iraq. And people have to remember, about 500,000 people in Iraq died between the two wars and the sanctions. Most of those were children. You're talking about 500,000 people dying. And very little news coverage from this. So we didn't go in for oil. They already had the oil with the Oil for Food program. And it wasn't because Saddam was going to leave the petrodollar for the euro, because the rhetoric for the war started before the EU even existed. There was no euro or European Union when they invaded Iraq the first time, or started the propaganda to invade them the second time. And the same thing with Gaddafi. That wasn't about the gold dinar. It was about oil to China, we need to be clear. So that's a lot of what you missed. But then again, the people that I'm talking about in the PNAC papers, White, Richard Perle, Louis Libby, Paul Wolfowitz, you saw in the beginning of the film, Wolfowitz was instrumental in Iran-Contra. And it's the same people over and over again. And you see the U.S. working with Al-Qaeda before 9/11, with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, as well as MEK and Jandala. And then you see them working with Al-Qaeda groups after 9/11, with ISIS. And I was really happy to point out that Arafat al-Sham, because you don't hear about them much, you always hear about al-Nusra and the Islamic State, but this is the group of moderate Syrians who let Zanmar out of jail. They had a prisoner strike. That was Muhammad Atta's handler, the ringleader of 9/11. Huh. They let him out of jail. He got arrested in Morocco. Something that I didn't say in the film was one of the dancing Israelis had a hash dealer from Morocco.
Yeah.
I mean, he said, oh, he's my hash dealer. It's kind of like saying, well, see, I did something a little bit illegal. But that, all these Moroccans, every single one in the suspect list on 9/11, their address is in Germany, all of them, where Zanmar in their cell was being monitored. That's how they called him. So I doubt this guy was a hash dealer, but couldn't prove it, so if any questions about that, the 9/11 side or Iran-Contra or any of the operations, did you know about Flight 23 in 299?
No.
I learned, well, slowly, but more from you.
Well, that's one question. I guess I can ask this one. Do you think that possibly, I mean, that Flight 93 may have been going for DC and maybe 23 may have been going for Building 7?
Maybe, but the time, if you look at the flight time and you look at how the news jumped the gun, the 50-story building fell.
Yeah.
And it's right at 10:45, it says in a quarter to 11 in another report. You get six of those in a row.
Yeah.
You know, what was that fourth explosion? What were they anticipating?
Waiting for something to hit. Yeah.
And that would have been when 93 arrived. And they also, in the transcripts, because 93's black box survived.
Yeah.
And that it says, we're going back to Halloween. So they were intending on going back where they came from.
Who was that?
Okay.
What was the guy's name on that?
So, Ziad al-Jara was supposed to be a fighter.
So it was a fighter? Like, the main fighter was
Well, Jeremy Glick happened to be, there was a judo champion that happened to be on, like, 93.
So that's why I went down.
The passengers took it down.
Because he fought,
that really screwed up everything. Yeah. But all the phone calls on that, from the air phones, not cell phones, they only mentioned three hijackers.
Oh.
And even the other hijackers never say Ziad, they talk about Saeed. The only evidence that Al-Jara was on the plane is that they found his passport. But then you have Urban Moving System companies there, two of them.
Two of them, okay.
That couldn't explain why they're there or where they're going, what they're doing. And then you have two of this man's first cousins, and these are real first cousins, not 33rd degree cousins like
yeah.
Working in Israeli espionage.
That's,
They're spying on Hezbollah and have been since the 80s.
Do you think Sears Towers would have been a target too?
One of those moving companies I listed up
there.
Yeah,
the moving, one without Urban, right?
Yeah.
The one just moving systems, right?
Had been spotted, they had Israelis casing that and taking photographs of it.
But was it, I forget, because I remember seeing that, I just don't remember if it was like a few days or like a week or after, or I don't
It was a few days after 9/11, they also had traces of explosives in the van.
Yeah.
So did the dancing.
They were filming, though. They were filming the around the Sears Tower from where as well.
There were some caught in the Mexican parliament as well.
Oh, that's, in October, right then.
There was a series of vans. And I'm having a text document go with this because it's a very hard thing to make a documentary about because a lot of it's just FBI reports and things that you're just reading. You know, there's no footage you can put with it legally. And then you want this on YouTube or Vimeo or something, and they'll catch it or anything, and you don't get clear. So I'm going to put the text document with it. We've always had the police report, which is where we got the five dancing Israelis' names. And then there was a report of the Jewish Daily Forward, at Army Radio, ABC, just here and there, and Justin Armando covered it some. But once I got the FFI, the Full Field Investigation Reports, six different reports from the FBI, they wiped a lot of things out, but in their redundancy, they messed up. Like, they left Jewish Agency in there when Paul Hirschberg was talking, and the Board of Governors for that was Ertime Wertheimer, who's the man that gave $250,000 to the police commissioner, who's the guy that admits arrest but doesn't admit the explosives. But you know it's two different bands because you have five guys on one, three in the other. That report was at night. It was near 11 o'clock at night. The dancing Israelis got arrested at 4 in the afternoon, or 3:56, so they definitely knew how many people were in the van by then.
Yeah.
But the most damning evidence there is Omari being asked by somebody, who I think was Yoram Shmuel, to come up to the roof because they're about to take down the second building. How do you know the second building is about to fall down? Also, this is just sort of circumstantial evidence, but I showed the phone numbers real fast, and I showed you the 356, which means they made a call as they were getting pulled over. But you look at the earlier calls, there's three calls, all three phones basically, call 955 to people. The building falls at 958. So they're basically calling around to everybody saying, hey, we're going to take it down, we're going to take it down. Then you have the verbal admission as well. Omari was not as tight with the other four Israelis. He'd only been in New York a couple of weeks. The reason he was with that group is because Sivan recognized him from the army. And so he'd stayed over at their house in Brooklyn the day before. That would say that was 3 miles away from him.
Wow.
But the guys at Classic International Moving Company, so that number was found on a notebook inside the van of Urban Moving Systems Company. The Miami field office is asking them, hey, you know, a 9/11 hijacker uses services. Why would the Miami field office know about a moving company in New Jersey unless they'd already followed somebody from Southern Florida up there? And 10 of the 15 hijackers, of course, are in Southern Florida. When you see that stuff on Flight 23 where they say, well, he had a fake ID and then he had his real ID, this is what they did. Same thing a lot of illegal immigrants do is they get an address, they get a driver's license, then they move to a different apartment and they issue a form for a change of address, and they send you a new license with your new address on it. Well, then you simply just keep your old license too and get this in my house. That's how you get multiple driver's licenses. The reason they were hitting up Tennessee is because that was one of the states that does not require a social security number to get a license. Kathy Smith had just been illegally sent a license for all kinds of purposes. And then you see in that report, of four of the guys stay in jail, one's returned to his home in New York. Guess which one that was?
Atala?
Yeah, Jerusalem. And how do you get $1 million bail that fast?
You know, there's one thing I was going to ask, as what was the thing of a lot of action from South America with these in Florida as well?
Well, see, yeah, because one, they do admit that there is a number to a guy in South America. Mm-hmm. And Omar tried to say, oh, that's not his phone number. That's a bank account number for this girl who owed money. Mm-hmm. Her name is Karen. But what are the odds that your bank account number happens to be a phone number, and it happens to be a guy in South America with ties to Middle Eastern terrorists. And then you have all these guys, Israelis, entering the United States from South America, from the same areas, and apparently one of the 9/11 hijackers, you have to do this to be Alvaro Amari, by the way, because he's the only one that lived in Florida and New Jersey. Trust me, it's him. There's no way. One had to be constructed as cover for the other.
I noticed like one of the Tennessee guys was, or two of them may have been, like they've lived in Venezuela or Argentina before?
Argentina,
yeah. Well,
that's where a lot of the ecstasy, where the drug ring was going, this is why they're spying on the DEA, is they're pushing MDMA hard in the early 2000s. Maybe you guys remember all the ecstasy that was around. If there was a $40 million bust in Los Angeles, there's a $40 million bust in New York. In both cases, Israelis running everything. Every time you have large drug scale operations like that, every time, and I showed this in the beginning of the film with a few examples, you're hiding some other covert operation.
Yeah.
Even the United States, with all the money they launder.
It's like a front, basically, right?
Yeah, and you saw that, but you have your dirty level and your extra dirty level. Uh-huh. So, the beginning of Iran-Contra wasn't that big a deal. It was the Israelis, they were just selling. Then they start selling weapons they're not supposed to sell, arms they're not supposed to sell. But apparently, even laundering all that money wasn't enough. Because on top of that, I'm sure you know the Gary Webb story.
Yeah.
You've got all this cocaine and crack coming into Los Angeles, Ricky Ross and all that.
Yeah.
Where the CIA didn't actually sell the drugs, but they allowed them to be sold. And they put them in context together. They always have plausible deniability.
One of the people, one person we know who was running a Hollywood We Are Change chapter, he had told me that in the late 90s, like 97, 98, he was part of the whole Dan Gurch. He was a part of the whole rave scene and was getting ecstasy back then and was getting it from Israelis in downtown, you know.
Yeah, they had one of the dancing Israelis also had a relative in North Carolina and Charlotte, who was part of this ring near, and in the Outer Banks they were pushing through wings. There's the wings everywhere, all over the Outer Banks now, selling souvenirs and things. But yeah, there's a lot of silly fronts. Zoomcopter was another one. But I would like to investigate the art students a lot more, because it just takes a lot of man hours to sit there and find the addresses, find where the hijackers were, and again compare the timelines. And especially when you see people follow them from Florida to New Jersey, which the Orange Smell did.
Yeah.
And Blanky Blank did. We don't have their names, but we know the company they work for and the leader went back and forth. That's more suspicious.
Yeah. How did the owner of the Urban Living System get out?
Yeah, right? They're supposed to, right?
Yeah.
They grounded all the planes after 9/11. He had Dama Suter flees, and his wife flees, and he's an official suspect, and the Israelis wouldn't hand him over.
I heard Saudis got out too, right? So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Saudis got out, but they weren't fleeing. They were just leaving.
Right.
I mean, Omar Amari was used as a middleman by Hacker Ben Fasile and Bandar Bush, we call him, to get money to Al-Hazmi. That's a fact. But That's what I was saying in the beginning of Safari Club. You're always going to use a middleman when I do that. But all the East Coast hijackers, which are the majority, they're going to Israeli cells. And then the 28 pages admits that there's foreign governments, plural, involved in sending us money. But, I mean, this isn't like the proper Saudi Arabian government. These are intelligence agencies. So they're equivalent of our Richard Lee, Cooper Black, and George Tenet. That's what I'm trying to stress, that these intelligence agencies don't belong to, they have no loyalty to a piece of dirt. They have loyalties to the people who pay them. And you have the Israelis and the United States, and by that I mean CIA and GID, working together all the time. And they've been doing it since the 60s at least. And they had to do it after Watergate because they had so much heat in the CIA, so they set up the Safari Club. You know, Rand was kicked out in 79, but they kept all the other members.
Wow.
And these guys, so it's not shocking when I'm like, oh, look, it's Prince Bandar. To Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
And the CIA is aware of it. And they hid it from the FBI. They more than hid it from the FBI. Because they lied and said they did tell the FBI, and they hadn't. I mean, we had this guy cut too. Spike Bowman went and squashed the anthrax investigation. He had all the Ames strain of anthrax destroyed in the middle of trying to find out the anthrax.
Wow. Oops.
It's very similar to 93, because in 1993, the World Trade Centers were hit with a Ryder truck.
Mm-hmm.
And anthrax had been stolen from labs in Fort Detrick, Maryland. However, it was never mailed.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
It was never mailed because they got caught with a Ryder truck.
Okay.
But it's more than coincidence that at the same time, you have the same lab that anthrax stolen from it. I mean, the anthrax case is how they linked Iraq and Al-Qaeda together, because they sent Mohammed Atta back and brought him to anthrax between Iraqi officials.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the source of that from the U.S. then was James Woolsey, who passed it to Gary Schmidt of PNAC, and then William Crystal, both two citizens of Israel. But the ultimate source that James Woolsey got it from was Israeli security forces. And there's no way you can witness a transfer of anthrax that never took place between two parties that didn't have anthrax. Al-Qaeda didn't have anthrax and Iraq didn't have anthrax.
The U.S. strand, too.
Well, yeah, they're U.S. strands. They still could have stolen.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's true.
But, no, it had to be an inside job there. And I went into the theory of Phillips Act, and Dr. Ruby as my suspects. Unfortunately, Bruce Ivins, the final guy they accused, they chased Stephen Hatfield around for years. He won a large settlement. And then they went after Perry Mixell and Bruce Ivins, both of them killed themselves. Days before trial.
Wow.
Actually predicted that they were going to kill Bruce Ivins on July 4th of 2005. I was on Antimor Radio with Scott Word, and I said, oh, he's going to have a convenient suicide.
Wow.
Within a month, he was gone.
And Hadley, was he also friends or associated with Hauer, Jerome Hauer?
He was. Well, Stephen Hatfield, the reason they went after him was because he, Benoit Berth had a personal vendetta with this guy.
I remember seeing that on the review. Yeah.
It was anything. You see these sloppy cover-ups all the time, like when Lipton Ingo had a polonium overdose and died. And I heard some crazy stuff there. I mean, Jonestown was saying Putin bombed his own apartments. Like, you're on fire. No, I mean, that stuff never makes sense. The polonium was a botched smuggling operation, obviously.
Are you noticing at all, are you seeing a specific operational element, financial element, logistical element? That any particular state could be tied into any one of those type of elements?
It's what it is. It's our own counterintelligence that are set up in all these places ends up becoming the primary recruiter for privateers. And basically, after the advent of the nuclear bomb, you could no longer directly threaten countries anymore unless they didn't have it. So a way of getting at the Russians in particular was through proxy forces. But you'll see this growing privatization of our own military, too. Even when we don't have covert mercenaries, we have overt mercenaries. I mean, that's what Blackwater is. That's what Z is, triple canopy.
ISIS.
ISIS, yeah, basically. They're supposed to be covert, but they're not. I mean, Putin's really crippled the CIA. They've gone on Fox News and admitted, oh, he's crushing the rebels in Syria, our moderate rebels that were actually hired by the CIA. I mean, all they want is to cripple Syria. Assad was not some brutal dictator. From the year 2000 to 2010, they didn't say a word about it.
He's educated in Great Britain for crying out.
He speaks English. I mean, I don't like any government, but compared to ISIS, I think everybody would have Bashar al-Assad. Right?
Yeah.
Well, we had Omar Shoshani in there. They may have killed him the other day, but that was the famous ginger cherish from Chechnya.
Oh, the redhead guy? Oh, okay. That's who he was, okay.
They may have got him, but the Chechen main offensive, I mean, Chechnya is not an organic uprising either. Yeah. Even when there is a legitimate resistance within the country, it's quickly going to get swallowed by the CIA.
Right.
You'll see that with alternative parties in the United States. You saw that with Occupy was hijacked, the Tea Party was hijacked, Black Lives Matter is getting hijacked.
Yeah, change was hijacked.
Yeah, that was kind of goofy from the beginning. Yeah, I so too. And with 9/11, you get, I mean, this, I was naming, I get sued so bad if I'm wrong about any of that. I went after lawyers.
Yeah.
I called them a gap tooth party Zionist. but you have people to say, oh, it's, what is it, Illuminati or something. You know, it's this path to nowhere, it's like dog chasing their tail. You get all this goofy nonsense. But I don't think you can get any more damning than having a vehicle packed with bombs and calling in a report on another vehicle.
Yeah, if I would have seen that a long time ago, I would have been reading a lot more.
How long did it take you to get that footage of the news coverage of the vans being stopped and the arrests? You had to wait a long time.
Anyway, because I had at my house and my girlfriend's house at the time, we were taking different channels. Oh. I said, something's wrong, take all this because...
You did? No shit.
Really?
Wow.
Like 9/12, no shit.
Right? Oh, yeah. No because shit. I had told Ann and Trevor, as you remember me and my girlfriend at the time, I said, how would you feel if 2,000 people were killed in New York this year sometime? Because of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Then would you think it's still in our yard? It's a lot of people were asking, did you know? I said, no. I didn't know. But, you know, we were in massive debt, and, you know, things got too quiet. And once the first plane hit, I thought, please let that be an accident. There was another one, I'm okay. Because
right.
I had already been looking at PNAC.
Really?
Well, okay, before
it was out, right?
Long before.
some colleges were studying, were looking, like researching PNAC prior to 9/11.
PNAC had a paper in July of 2001, Osama bin Laden's picture on it, and it talked about Iraq and anthrax.
Wow.
That's all set.
4 months, 4 months apart.
On July, a month before. Oh wait, I didn't talk about the meeting. That's something else we skipped too, is the State Department officials meeting with Israelis, talking about how they had to get 9/11 suspects out of the country before they spilled the beans.
Right.
I mean, that's my former boss from the FBI would say, I mean, she naively, after she uncovered this information, because she speaks Farsi
yep.
and Syrian, pretended to her boss that was of course, they knew about it. They had blueprints being moved around of skyscrapers, 100 stories or more, and a bridge, which is probably George Washington Bridge.
And that's also like on that second round of attacks from the World Trade Center. I don't 93 bombing with the bombers. That was also the other thing too: is the bridges, the tunnels, the same.
You're supposed to say the hollow tunnel.
All that.
Yeah. Dude, and that's all we know about. Like, maybe when they got caught on the George Washington Bridge, they called up some people that were going to bomb the Lincoln and Allentown, too, like, and called some stuff off. Like, there were other planes. Like, there could have been a
It seemed like they called.
To be different.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
They called about the Palestinian bomb makers and said they were coming through the Allentown.
Yeah. Right?
The cops, they just shut down all the exits.
Right.
And catching them.
But they wanted to create a panic by everyone stuck.
They had not known that they had been seen that morning.
Right.
A lot of
things.
It is.
They're hijacked.
A lot of
things.
But it's like there were hijackers, they were financed by Saudi Arabia, and then there were Israelis blowing up the buildings, essentially. Like Israeli special forces blowing up the buildings while the hijackers were.
Just the hijackers on the West Coast had Saudi ties because they were living there. They had a guy who administered the mosque in San Diego. And so they were using Omar Bayami and Osama Bastan to funnel money to them through their wives. So it's a confusing chart. I did it with text going up, but these two guys gave it to their wives who were giving it to the hijackers. And they used Riggs Bank as their interview.
Right.
And Riggs Bank's the one that set up the Safari Club.
In the first place.
So BCCI was already busted and gone. So they went right back to Riggs. Riggs Bank created the Federal Reserve. When the Aldrich Bill on Jekyll Island, all that legislation that was written up from the requirements from Riggs Bank and another bank in New York that they merged with. So those are your original dead pigeons. Any questions on the other stuff, on Iraq War questions or Contra questions or Syria questions?
There's a lot.
Banana wars.
You
see the clear pattern, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Finance the same way, Contra finance the same way. The Contras have jumped, too, because it's international. You have Iran and Israel and the United States working together. And they killed over 30,000 people in Nicaragua.
Can I ask the audience how many of you guys actually knew about the Banana Wars by that name before? Okay. I was just curious.
Not far back, I only knew about like the stuff from the 40s or 50s, like with Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
Prior before I ran about it.
I'd never heard it phrased
see,
as the Banana Wars.
They all get reinvaded later. What a lot of people know from maybe United Fruit Hunger.
That's what I meant. Yeah, United Fruit. That's what I meant.
See, okay, well, we invaded Grenada, we invaded Nicaragua. So all through the 80s, all the prior Banana War targets were reinvaded, except this time to stop communism. That's the excuse. But it's all the same people they invaded before.
Yeah.
Except that was pre-communism. So the excuse changes. And they even recently they tried to say Mexican drug cartels were hooked up with Middle Eastern terrorists.
Trying to say ISIS is crying across the border too.
Just like Iraq over and over in the 90s and then again in the 2000s.
Right,
attacking the same people. And Iran three times.
Iraq was invaded in 91, you have to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Baby's on incubator's excuse.
Right.
Afghanistan too. Even if we were only chasing terrorists and going to kill bin Laden, why would you have a complete regime change and overthrow the government and create a new one?
Because obviously it's
exactly. I mean, I make the example, if somebody from Canada came down and murdered someone in New York, we'd go in and find that person and catch them. We don't blow up Canada and replace their government.
Unless you're America. Unless you're American.
It's not hard. If they ever get a change in president. Afghanistan was taken over, and that's been our longest war. That surpassed the Indian Wars, which used to be the longest. Now it's Afghanistan. And Vietnam was 9 years. Longer than that, when I started the French occupation. So I call that helicopters and heroin. Vietnam. And that was another overstuffing communism as the excuse.
Mm-hmm. So what is the end game here as far as Israel is concerned, especially?
These guys want economic hegemony. They don't want any economic or military rival to arise that can challenge the hegemony they currently have. And they side with Israel because that's what will cause the most conflict. You've got these religious fanatics, Zionist Jews in Israel, who are the equivalent of Wahhabi Muslims in Saudi Arabia, and who are our best friends, those two, because they're crazy.
Yeah.
You can always rely on crazy to create conflict, and that's what the MIC wants. Low-level perpetual conflict is perpetual profit. It's worth billions, trillions. So if you sided against Israel, well, it'll be over in a day.
I think it's also to maybe separate the region into ethnic groups,
what
makes Israel okay to be racist and ethnic.
Yeah, and that's why, it's odd because you would think, well, don't the Kurds have the same kind of claim, and yet we let Turkey bomb them and all stuff. I think a lot of it, too, is just the influence of lobby over U.S. policy. More than governments, churches are getting tens of millions of dollars each, billions, excuse me, to the Israeli state. Although the Presbyterians are divesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The same lawyer for the dancing Israelis trying to get BDS.
I didn't know it was a woman. I thought it was a man or something.
Well, it was one man, one
woman. That woman, oh, it's still a woman.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, I'd call her a harpy. Harpy. She tried to sue Jimmy Carter. But not really. See, this was the excuse. See, 9/11 Myths likes to debunk all the easy 9/11 stuff. If they don't touch the stuff, I say. And I asked them, because I are these people on their side. I said, look, why are you saying their lawyer are trying to clear their names and say, ooh, we saw a different trial, right? And yeah, I said, I agree. And they never did, because they never served the papers. It's not really a genuine lawsuit if you never, you cannot have a lawsuit if you don't serve papers.
Yeah.
And professional lawyers would know that.
Yeah. So it's like not even really an attempt either. Really.
It was a PR stunt.
Yeah.
That's just smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, just be like, look, we're so upset about our this that we're even suing them. That's to show how innocent we are. Yeah. Of course, he wouldn't sue them with those documents that were in there are about.
Oh, dude.
No way. And do you see the Rosetta Stone? Wasn't that coming there? I got to figure out who the blanks were based on that information. But, I mean, why? The fact that there's a 1,800 page document, like I got all the goodies out of it for you, there's 1,800 pages, is not from innocent people.
Yeah.
If you're innocent, oh, I was driving, man, what do you do? There's something sitting there flicking lighters, and you know, happy people dead and burning alive behind them, and they're just posing for pictures.
It's totally normal.
I love the claim where they say, well, first we thought it was a terrorist attack. They're like, okay, then why are you posing for pictures for a plane crash? What's so cool about a plane crash?
Yeah. Why would you even do that? I mean, it's, yeah.
You can kind of see a real sick person saying, well, now that they've had terrorism, maybe they'll join us or something. But why would you even assume it? And then they lied already and said they thought it wasn't. So. But I think there's nothing more condemning than saying, hey, come up with your camera. We're about to take down the second tower.
Yeah.
The BBC report's pretty bad, too.
So bad.
Yeah. And I found another one. What was it?
Fox.
Yeah,
I've rarely seen it while it's collapsing.
They kind of say, oh, wait.
Oops. And then just keep doing the report.
Well, what'd you do?
What I find is interesting, too, is how come other media outlets didn't get that Fox and BBC report and say, hey, what's going on?
Because they're going to leave the march.
No one would do it, but. I mean, if you're skeptical about it, saying, come on, it's 9/11, but you look at 40 years of occupation of Palestine, and our news media won't even say what a settlement is. They never do. They never really get, I mean, they're cutting heads off in Saudi Arabia, stoning people to death, teenagers. We don't complain. That's not a human rights violation. Not when it's our team.
Okay.
And Uzbekistan's our ally. This guy boiled people alive. And that was bad enough to say, hey, don't burn people alive. See what he did? He took the next round of protesters, 73 people, and froze them to death.
Wow.
So just out of spite. Oh, you don't want me to burn people? I'm going to freeze the next people. Paul Kagame is our principal ally. He's butchered so many people in the Congo, cutting their heads off. I mean, it's disgusting.
Yep.
They threw people in volcanoes during Iran-Contra.
Really?
Human sacrifice.
Oh, really?
Child soldiers just
pulled up. They threw people in volcanoes during Iran-Contra.
They have dry feeding. People talk about waterboarding. There's dry boarding. And there's also force feeding the tubes because people are trying to kill themselves by not eating. They're still forcing them to eat. The Guantanamo Bay, there's no trial or anything. So you notice all these 9/11 suspects, like Ali Sheikh Mohammed and Gitmo, think of Gitmo. And the two Saudi patsies they had financing money, they go to Gitmo. But Omar Bahimi walks around free.
Yep.
Yeah. Hell's Ammar is free. Mohammed Atta's handler is free. Because of our water rebels.
I'm surprised Renzi Youssef is just like in a normal facility. I mean, with
Right.
Yeah. And Ajaj is in that same thing, too.
They all escape prison after the USS Cold bombing. He comes back, he's in the 93 plus, then he bombed a plane in Iran. They didn't care. And it was finally when he tried to bomb a plane in Japan that he was caught. That was a no-no.
Sooner back to the United States.
No, somebody said that. But an address is not him.
I think that was all set up, like a fake setup. I looked up Sooner and I found that he's like,
never coming back
here. I doubt that's exactly what I would think. But he's like working and lives in Sweden or something and works for like some company that builds RVs. He's got tons of press photos. Looks very manicured. He looks very manicured. He doesn't look like...
Wait, a company that builds RVs?
Yeah.
There was a company in Southern Indiana that used to build RVs. Mm-hmm. They had special compartments in the RVs where they smoked drugs.
Right.
Bingo.
Yeah. Wow. That guy's never coming back. That's awesome. The FBI just started investigating people who are investigating Sooner.
Yeah. His name's too known at this point. Yeah.
Well, I got the 2004 list of suspects. So this is after the first year of the Iraq War. And I got the copy from Argentina. It's the best I could get.
Really?
But the names, I mean, I got the Spanish translated, no problem. The names is still the names. But a lot of these Moroccan characters are on there again. They misspelled one of these names, but she's in both. What I'd like to do in the future is just start comparing the addresses of when they were in New Jersey and New York, and when they were in Germany, and when the Israelis were, and see how much overlap there is. You can start through deduction and figuring out mm-hmm. who was where.
Yeah.
So I've got these different suspect lists, and I have their addresses, and I have the dates. It just takes a long time.
Yeah.
That person is there, but that one's there. But it's doable. So it's something I want to do in the future.
The flight schools, what do you think of that as far as them being able to recruit from Germany and the fact that the flight schools weren't even around that you know, they barely got loans apparently to start them, and there's this character, I guess, Pascal Schweier or something.
Well, a lot of these flight schools were in the drug smuggling during the contract
as
well.
Yeah.
So it's hard to believe anything coming from some of the people that worked there. But Haji Anjor had been in the United States since the mid-90s. And he got a pilot license out of Arizona. Not the best pilot, but good enough to crash a plane.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot to crash a plane.
Yeah.
He hit the Pentagon. I know people have problems with that, but come on. If you can land a plane on the runway, you can hit the first floor of the building. Just don't put a name gear up. And that's all it was. That's why I put that clip at the end of all of the debris after the sea rain, just to show people the town to show how it was. You're denying the phone calls and denying the pilots and stuff cuts off your investigation right there, and you don't see all the money leads back to these characters in Saudi Arabia and Israel. That's really important. Where Al Jar having two first cousins in espionage, or his uncle being a politician. So. We have a lot more. So.
What about this character I've also looked into is Alvin Melnick, and with him being an heir, I guess, of Lansky, and his son is married into Saudi, and I guess his finance is all tied in with all that flight school too, and the bankers behind that.
Well, most of Lansky family went legitimate after they made enough money, but
really,
yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms going over the New York Mafia. I briefly mentioned the Gambinos, which is one of the Lansky rivals, but.
Yeah.
They paid off in our care for favorable contracts, as he sat on the same board as that earlier. But $500,000 for what? For Windows contracts, I think it was they got. I mean, it was a payoff, for sure. But I think it would take a film about the mob, actually, to explain the New York Mafia. I did, in the beginning, I was throwing out names like, Sam Carolla and the Marcello brothers and so on. Because if you study JFK, you know about these people.
Yeah.
If you study the mob, you know about these people. But my reason for it was just to show how that if you use organized crime in any country, you have the distributor. So in Mexico, it's going to be the cartel gangs. You know, in Afghanistan, it's warlords. In Somalia, it's Al-Qaeda. You know, in Syria, it's ISIS. But $65 billion a year in opium disappearing out of Afghanistan every year, what's it being spent on? When people can get drugs in jail, anybody that leaves the war on drugs is on drugs. In jail, you have a completely controlled environment, people in a cage. How could they possibly get drugs inside of jail unless the police bring it there? There's no other way. Mm. Yeah. They're not all mules. So. But that's what people have to understand. The illegality of the drugs are what make them expensive as they are. And then the CIA allows its own underlings to sell it openly. And a lot of them thought, well, that's the better policy. It's the enemy of our enemy is our friend kind of thing. And the anti-communists are making a lot of money from narcotics, so we're just going to let the narcotics traffic go because we want them to fight the communists. So that'd be. And the drug dealers realize that too. But as long as we can overlap our interests with the FBI loses a lot. Plus, you know, they Costello the goods on Hoover.
Oh, is that who that, that's what that JT and when he was easy New York mob, or was?
Oh, Frank Costello?
Yes. So it was the New York mob? Okay. So he was the one that had to compromise.
That's no. Cool.
Yeah, and then Tulsa. The little place you go on the beach.
That's what it was, huh?
I have photos of that in my JV case. Any other questions on it?
Well, I wanted to ask one thing, like not to encourage any type of sloganeering, but if you had one piece of like soundbite information that you wanted to push at this point in the coming, I don't know, election cycle in the coming like 4 to 5 years, what do you think would be the most important issue? Would it be the 28 pages or something?
I mean, we've got to cut aid to Israel.
Yeah.
Because that's what gets recycled back to purchase conquerors, that gets us in all these conflicts in the Middle East. Yeah. I mean, millions of people would be alive today if we hadn't followed those policies. And the last person to challenge him on that was Robert Kennedy. Someone shot him. A couple of people, actually.
A Palestinian.
Yeah, right. His lawyers all worked for the mob at a hotel one day and killed him.
The Palestinian was like, no, let's not be Israel.
Well, I'd say it like this.
Exactly. That's totally how it went down.
This is a good one.
Sirhan fired his 8-shot revolver 13 times in front of Kennedy, hitting him 3 times in the back.
Man. He must have been a cop.
Actually, thank you to Caesar was a cop because he shot him.
I saw a video he did about that. That's pretty
John
funny.
John Pilger was there as a witness.
Who was?
John Pilger.
Pilger was in there? Really? He was a witness. I didn't know that.
The guy next to him was shot, so they're here. Right?
Yeah.
Sirhan's here. And the witness. And Robert Kennedy was over here. Then Eugene Caesar's behind him shooting. And the man next to Sirhan was shot. Now, unless Sirhan is firing his gun like this, it's somebody behind you.
Yeah.
They wrestled on the ground. But he wasn't like shooting like that because you have 5 people who were hit. 3 times, that's all 8 bullets. So how do you count for the misses and why is someone shot next to you? The witnesses at the event saw him using fire his gun. His first radio interview, he says he pointed his gun but he didn't fire. But then from that point on, he says, I didn't have a gun, what are you talking about? Mm. And then he says he sold it, which is true. He did sell it 3 months after he shot it. They've actually found the gun now. It's in a lake in Arkansas.
Really?
Wow.
Holy shit.
And they're doing the testing now to see if they can
the ballistics?
Still get the ballistics.
Wow.
Caesar's living in the Philippines right now.
Who was that?
The guy that shot JFK, or RFK, not JFK, Jim Ridge.
Really?
Yeah. And you can see he's living in the Philippines.
Philippines, really?
Wow. He worked for ACE Security all day. If the internet had existed in 63, 68, it would have been done immediately.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dumb shit about JFK, too. Like
his
driver or his wife or...
People say that they fired from the gutter down below. Yeah, I mean, like...
a different shooter.
Yeah, it's like, you're going to hire an assassin who's going to only have this much space to you know...
There's an assassin for the mob who was in Dallas that day, who drove there all the way from California. The only reason he wasn't in jail is because he had a pardon from the governor. He had killed people before. He's wearing leather gloves. He hates the president. He can't explain why he's there. Deckers lets him go. Sheriff will never.
Yeah.
I probably do a candidate, but I'm going to be more than Holmes.
No.
That's another film there. JFK is huge. I'm thinking RFK would be easier. I'd rather work backwards, but...
I gotta talk to you about that on the side, because I might have something for you on that.
Okay. Yeah, that's where it all fell apart with the Kennedys, because they wanted Algerian independence, they wanted to register the American Science Council as a foreign agent, which became AIPAC. They wanted to inspect and load up for the nuclear weapons, so they had to go. You know, a lot of Jewish and Italian mafia, they lost over $1 billion in revenue when Castro came to power and beat Batista out of Cuba. And Jimmy Hoffa's taking the pension funds and building Las Vegas, and New York and Chicago are fighting over Las Vegas and LA for new territories. But the Southern mob had been established with the Marcellos and Traficante syndicates. And it's the New Orleans mob, which I talked about in the beginning, that there wasn't a clear boss in Texas, but the narcotics section of it was there, and the Marcellos were running that. I mean, that's the first people to visit Jack Ruby in jail. And it's just this analyst that if you're gonna kill, you hire a privateer, and the mafia's the way to go because Robert Kennedy can prosecute him. And they both of them end up dead, but I mean, the CIA wanted it. It takes a lot. You heard the James E. Jr. interview, you know, with Ruby and Oswald and the whole cell of Bannister and so on. There's no doubt that that was a conspiracy. Our own government admits that. Our own investigation said there were two shooters. I mean, that's admitted by Congress. What happened is you had this insane, stupid film from Oliver Stone come out, which made it never admit to the mob, ever.
Well, of course, they
couldn't cover it up, but they didn't. You know, they ran it out.
Yeah.
Never mentioned Israel.
Never mentioned that it's produced by Arnold Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, it says unless you look it up. I mean,
Piper and I called that.
Yeah, I know.
Then Oliver Stone's son is acting, and you think he's really, like,
shown?
Yeah, you think he's, like, really, like, going off the rocker and, like, hates his dad now and all that stuff?
Yeah, I just think he's dumb.
I think he's an actor. I just wonder.
He had
I read about him in
Dave's book.
Yeah.
I just spent like a month hanging out with Sean just around, and then I read that. It was just like, oh my god, I'm going to finish
better. He likes hookers.
Dave Cole's book.
Oh, David Cole.
Oh, well, Liberty.
He had Mossad spy was Chu. I can't remember pronounce the name. Chu Laval. He interviewed. There's one. He interviewed Mossad spy. That's very recent, like a year ago. Bolin was on. Chris Bolin was on there, and he kind of questioned him on that. Like, oh, I saw. You see, you had so and so. You know, Chu Laval, you know, from Mossad on your show. It's really weird. What's that?
FSB, KGB.
Really?
That's whatever. I get all the black sheep.
Yeah.
I don't mess with that. Like, I feel like the evidence is there.
Yeah.
And I don't care about thermite or, you know, someone sets your house on fire, you wonder who did it, not whether they use gas or kerosene, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's too much hair splitting, it's too much focus on Building 7, it's too much, you know. You got all these guys celebrating the attack.
Yeah.
All of them get interrogated. All their stories are different from each other. Saban's saying they got there between 10 and noon when he's photographed there between 8:45 and 9:03. They leave in the company van after the company's shut down. What, do you just give you a car? None of it made sense. Five other moving agencies, all from the Foreign Intelligence Agency. You've got two of them ready by counterintelligence. They knew who they were ahead of time. You've got an Israeli spying on the DEA, 32 different Defense Department facilities. We move around hundreds of thousands of dollars. Selling art?
That would be the way we could do it for Rivera. When you talked about the crystal thing and then the Thurman technology and all that, that was like, wow.
Well, the microwave. That was, like you said, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow used that wooden eagle that they hauled out.
I think they were doing this.
Oh, we're fucked.
I think if they were discreet and microwaves were being bounced on campus, if they pick it up.
Well,
if they happen to be on the switch, I guess, but they would be on if they weren't, right?
I don't know. I mean, that's just one possibility. When it starts getting to that kind of science, I'll let other like science people handle that. I'm just more into the geopolitical side of it.
Yeah, that's freaking stuff, though, you know.
It is. I mean, why else would you step by on the DEA's home zone?
Or being able to see through it all.
There certainly were spying on the DEA.
They got tied into the whole art fire thing.
Yeah, what they, Texas one or?
Remember the Advanced Movie Sister Company?
Yeah.
And they were tied into that whole, it was on that court back when it was on.
Did you see Uzi get arrested?
Yeah.
And he had the same address as Hanan Sarfati.
Yeah.
He got arrested in Mississippi. He puts that Florida now. They're all getting Florida license.
Who's the governor of Florida?
Yeah. It was. Bush. Some came in Miami, but look, most of them are living in Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood Park. They're all right next to each other.
It's all in country land, basically.
It is all right in country.
Yeah.
It's all it is. It's the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it's LA too.
Yeah.
I mean, Omar Miami actually bought their apartment's first month's rent. And then lived next to him, moved in with like next to him.
Yeah.
Lived him first. No, we met him in LA and then he took him to San Diego.
Wow.
They're living in San Diego together. Some of the houses I flashed up there were their houses. I actually took the time to find them.
What about the there was a one shot I saw, it looked like somebody was being under interrogation. Was that an actual photo?
Was that the orange smell?
Was that him?
May have been.
Ah.
It'd be cool if you could visually demonstrate the whole. Where am I living? You can do Earth.
Yeah, I know. I have a paper version of that. But I wasn't about to give that anything
yeah.
The cinema part.
Come on.
I'm not the movie person. I just do all the research and that. I mean,
yeah.
Things I'm definitely cutting in there. And I just, this first time to see it, like some places you couldn't read it. It's too blurry. It looks fine. But on the size, you know, for YouTube and stuff, when you blow it up like this, the file size is not big enough. That's just going to be tedious in Duck's Diet type of thing to do. But do you like it? Was it too long? How do you know I cut an hour? New information to keep you interested in.
Yeah. Now, other than you, there's definitely one question. With the urban moving system vans in Shanksville, was that part of the Freedom of Information Act? Was that a separate police report from Pennsylvania?
So there was one classic international movers pulled over and one urban moving system.
Okay. That's what it is, okay. And that's from Pennsylvania though, or?
So what happened was the urban moving systems were pulled because that urban moving system is a logo. Classic international systems got pulled because a notebook found in the van of urban moving systems had the phone number for classic international systems. And then they realized that whole thing was run by Israelis too. And all the other non-Israeli employees were like, yep, they hate Americans, they have private meetings in Hebrew, we're not allowed in there, they got all these hard drive for some reason. So
amazing they even hired other people besides Israelis to work for them. They do that.
Well, somebody had moved furniture.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. You don't expect them to work, do you? No, if you have a front, you have to have some.
Yeah.
It's a front.
Yeah, something's going on.
They're not the ones moving furniture to World Trade Center.
They're
moving furniture to World Trade Center. I'm trying to interview those guys. I have a lead on that, and that's what I want to go and get. I want to talk to them more about how long were these meetings?
Yeah.
I doubt there are furniture moving meetings, as I said.
It's going to be really intricate.
There's a lot of people I'd like to get a hold of if I could get over there. But I want to advertise what I'm going to do, because I want to change what they're
going to do. For interviewing in New York, people, specific people?
Well, I have, they had a flyer inside their car of a birthday bash, and a certain DJ was there and all that, so I have people I can talk to.
Oh, that's right. I've seen a flyer about that. It was like he's either an Israeli event or something to do with Israelis in New York doing an event or something.
It was Karen's birthday bash.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
You look at, they had an Israeli DJ in there, and they were all there. But they, you know, there's a lot of circumstantial stuff. Like, they all had tickets to fly out of the country on a random Tuesday. You know, we're all going to different countries today.
Yeah.
And the fact that there were skis thrown in the car means they're leaving like that night or something, right? They also had a book in Hebrew of the Hobbit, which is no big deal by itself. It's kind of a big book, something you read, you know, if you're traveling. And, like, you have to have it at work and keep it in the reading system and all the time.
Yeah.
So you read one page before what you know. So that with the skis together and the clothes and that they're all trying to get back to Brooklyn and they couldn't because they didn't shut down everything. That's enough. And the Kirschberg brothers lived in Brooklyn. Amari lived in Manhattan. And then Yarny Bell lived in New Jersey.
Well, I think we're going to get kicked out of here in like the next 10 minutes. So maybe final questions if anybody has any more.
I haven't been shot yet, so I can just talk about it some more.
Although you're going to get sued by that one.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody.